You're listening to Economics Amplified, the latest thinking on the biggest issues from UChicago's Becker-Friedman Institute.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Becker Brown Bag series. I'm Chad Severson. I'm a professor here at Booth. It's my pleasure to introduce our speaker today. Jesse Shapiro came to Chicago from Harvard, where he got his PhD in 2005. He actually was hanging out with us long before then. I think Jesse, if I remember correctly, Jesse gave his first talk here at Chicago when he was about 12 or 13 years old. I might be misremembering, but we could tell from the beginning he was a natural Chicago kind of economist. And he joined us more formally as a Becker Fellow in 2005, and then as a professor here in the economics group since 2007. Jesse works on a number of issues in his research. One particular area of focus is the economics of ideology and how that interacts with media markets, and that's what we're going to hear about today. So let me get out of the way and bring Jesse up, and the floor is yours, Jesse.
Thanks, Chad. Okay, thanks everybody. So let me get my slides up. So this is ongoing work that I'll kind of report on and give you some facts today. And it's joint with my colleague here, some of you know, Matt Jensko. He's kind of my usual partner in crime, especially when it comes to news media issues. So you know, one of the things that's been a very central principle in legal scholarship and thinking about political systems for a really long time is that democracy is going to work better when we have an informed citizenry. And that's been a very basic tenet, goes back to the Enlightenment at least, probably goes back to Aristotle. Okay? And if people are going to be informed, that's going to mean that they have to have access to sources of information, and pretty much by definition, some of the time, they're going to learn that what they thought was true isn't true. Okay? That's really basic to having a functioning political market. And as a result, I think, of that view, when the Internet emerged, people started to wonder, well, what effect will this major revolution in information technology have on the functioning of the political aspects of our society? Okay? And the initial reaction was, this will be great. It will further democratize information, give lots more people access to views they hadn't heard about before. That was kind of, I think, the first wave of thinking on this topic. Subsequent to that, people started to step back and say, well, maybe that's not quite right, because by proliferating lots of options, maybe the Internet will make it easier for people to segregate themselves ideologically. So maybe the Internet will make it possible for everybody to have their own specialized news outlet, never hear what other people think, and we won't have as much dialogue in society as we used to have. So this view started to become quite popular, and it's been advocated by lots of different people concerned about the Internet creating a news market that's increasingly self-segregating, constantly playing back to us in amplified form our existing preferences, splitting or polarizing the American electorate, and destroying our common discourse and shared understanding. So really dangerous-sounding consequences of the Internet. And the person who I think is most closely associated with this view, who's articulated it most clearly, is Cass Sunstein, who used to teach at our law school and now works for the Obama administration. And in an essay and then a series of books, Sunstein's argued that as a result of the Internet, we may find ourselves in a situation where people sort themselves into innumerable homogeneous groups, which often results in amplifying their pre-existing views, okay? With liberals reading mostly or only liberals, moderates reading moderates, conservatives reading conservatives, neo-Nazis, neo-Nazis. And that as a result of this, we won't have the kinds of unplanned, unanticipated encounters that are central to our democracy. So that's kind of probably the clearest articulation of this concern. And Sunstein says we should be especially worried about this if the Internet is going to be taking time or other resources away from other domains in which people might have political interactions. Okay, in particular, offline media. Okay, so maybe the Internet will take time away from offline media like newspapers and magazines and broadcast networks, which cause people to have a range of chance encounters with diverse others and exposure to materials and topics they didn't seek out. So Sunstein's argument is these are more passive media. Maybe the Internet, because it forces more active choice, will prevent people from finding out about things that they don't seek out intentionally. Okay? And then Sunstein's also worried about the Internet substituting for face-to-face interactions. He says the diverse people who walk the streets and use the parks are likely to hear speakers' arguments about taxes or the police, They might also learn about the nature and intensity of views held by their fellow citizens. And when you go to those places, you might have a range of unexpected encounters. So again, those interactions are more passive, and hence they might expose you to views you aren't looking for. Whereas the internet, which requires more active engagement, may not do that. So that's Sunstein's concern. And what we've set out to do in this project is basically try to evaluate, at least today, how big of a concern is this? To what extent do we actually see the internet, by creating a proliferation of choice, allowing people to segregate themselves ideologically, or to what extent does the internet look like it's doing what we initially hoped it would do, which is helping people to encounter a diverse range of views? So that's kind of what we set out to do. Before I show you the evidence, let me step back a little bit and just talk about why would we expect Sunstein to be right, or why might we expect Sunstein to be wrong? So what are the kind of conceptual issues at stake here? Okay, so another way to say it is, when would we expect increasing the number of options available or lowering barriers to entry, creating a proliferation of choice, to cause a market to become more segregated along some dimension? Okay. And I think the simplest way to articulate why that might happen is to go back to a model some of you have probably seen in your classes, which is the old model of dry cleaners. Okay, so in this model, we have a city that consists of just a single main street, and people are arrayed along this main street uniformly from the west side of the street to the east side of the street. And let's just say we start off in a world where there's only two dry cleaners. Okay, one just a little bit left of center, one just a little bit right of center, let's say. Okay, well, this is a pretty good world in Sunstein's way of thinking, because in this world, people from the east side of town often will encounter people from the middle of town, and people from the middle of town will often encounter people from the west side of town, assuming everybody goes to the dry cleaner closest to them. So this is a really well-functioning dry cleaner democracy. Okay? Now, what would happen to our dry cleaner democracy if we added lots of choice? Let's say we open up lots and lots and lots of dry cleaners now all over the town, and everybody just goes to the one that's closest to them, because that's the most convenient dry cleaner. Well, now we have a slightly less well-functioning dry cleaner democracy, because the people who live in the far right portion or far east portion of the town, they only encounter other people who live pretty close to them, other people who find this to be the most convenient dry cleaner. Likewise for the people on the far west or far left portion of the town, and so centrists will only encounter other centrists when they go drop off their dry cleaning, and people who are living on the east side of town will only encounter other people who live near them. So this will no longer be a well-functioning dry cleaner democracy in which people have chance encounters with diverse others. Okay? So that's kind of, I think, in some sense, the simplest illustration of why Sunstein might be right. Why would we expect conceptually that these consequences might follow from a proliferation of choice on the internet? Okay? Now I want to think about a different kind of market in which something else would happen. Okay, so let's take a different example. Let's think about action movies. Okay? I want to think about our same little town. Let's suppose it's so small it only supports enough screens to show 3 action movies at a time. Okay? And these movies are Terminator, Batman, and the latest James Bond sequel. These are safe because this way we can use the same slides over and over. There will always be a Terminator movie, a Batman movie, and a James Bond movie about to come out. Okay, so let's say we have just these 3 screens. Well, again, we'll have a really well-functioning movie theater democracy. Will the kind of people who, will people encounter lots of other different kinds of people at the movie theater? Probably, because nobody has much choice. So anybody who wants to see an action movie is going to have to pick one of these 3. So it's going to be hard for people to segregate themselves a whole lot and isolate themselves from people with different kinds of action movie preferences. Okay. Now, what would happen if we lowered the cost of introducing new movies or added more screens, so now we could have lots and lots of action movies, including some that don't even exist or we've never heard of. Okay? So we add movies about elves and movies about snakes to kind of the bread and butter core action movies that define our age. Okay? Well, what would happen to our action movie democracy? My guess is it wouldn't actually matter all that much. Why? Well, it's true that the people who like elf movies would go to ElfQuest, and most other people wouldn't go to ElfQuest, but those people would probably also go to see Terminator, Batman, and James Bond, because probably the people who have really rare or unusual preferences also are people who really like action movies. Okay? So the elf people And the snake people, they would be off in their isolated pockets when they go see their specialized niche films about elves and snakes. But everybody would meet up in what would effectively become the movie theater town square when everybody shows up to see Terminator and Batman and James Bond. And although I'm not going to actually present any data today about movies, turns out that this characterization I've given is actually basically true about entertainment products. And that's been known for decades in the marketing literature. So on the one hand, we might have an internet that looks like our dry cleaner's world, where if we add lots of choice, what we're going to do is drive people into specialized market segments where they're only going to encounter ideas encountered by other people exactly like them. Or it might be that the internet is like action movies, in which if we allow lots of choice, people will have specialized niches, but they'll all meet up together at some mass common outlets, the terminators of the news media world. And so in a sense, what you can think of this project as doing, or this line of research is doing, is trying to bring some data to bear to help us think about whether it turns out that the internet looks more like dry cleaners or the internet looks more like action movies. Okay, so before I tell you where we get the data, I want to say a little bit about what it is we're trying to measure. So if you want to get data, the first thing you need to know is what are you going to do with it when you get it? Okay, so let me say a little bit about how we're going to try to measure whether the world looks like the dry cleaner's world or whether the world looks like something else. Okay, so what we're going to do in this project is borrow some techniques from the literature on neighborhood segregation. Okay, so there's a large literature in the social sciences, in economics, political science, and sociology that tries to measure how geographically segregated, say, different metropolitan areas are by race. Okay, and that literature has come up with some measures that help you think about how can we compare the segregation in Cleveland to the segregation in Pittsburgh. So what we're going to do in this project is we're not going to have any new contributions to that literature. We're going to borrow ideas from that literature and apply them in a new way to ideology in the news media. Okay? How are we going to do that? Let me just define some terms that I'm going to come back to throughout the discussion today. So let's imagine we have some medium. Okay, it might be the internet, it might be television, newspapers, and that medium has a set of outlets in it. I might call them sites because I'll be mostly talking about the internet today, but I'll show you some results for other news media as well. And there's some universe of people, some population of individuals, and everybody's either a liberal or a conservative. Okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to define, for every outlet, we're going to define its share conservative to be the share of visitors to that outlet, viewers if it's a television station, literal visitors if it's an internet site, readers if it's a newspaper, who are conservative. Okay, so of the people who, say, on a given day visit this website, what fraction would self-identify as conservative? What fraction would self-identify as liberal? We're going to call that first number the site's share conservative. Okay. And then we're going to define for every person in this hypothetical universe what we'll call the conservative exposure, which is the share conservative on the average outlet visited by that user on an average day. Okay, so for this individual, across all, say, the news sites that they visit, what share of the other people on those news sites are conservative? And then we're going to define something that, again, we didn't invent. This is a standard tool in the racial segregation literature. We're going to define an isolation index, which is the difference between the conservative exposure of the average conservative and the conservative exposure of the average liberal. Okay? So I'll go through a little more detail, but basically what this measure is saying is we're going to say that a medium, say the internet or newspapers, is more segregated if conservatives are on outlets with lots of other conservatives and liberals are on outlets with lots of other liberals. Whereas if everybody is kind of in a random mix of outlets, we're going to say this medium's not that segregated. So what are the mechanics of this measure? The best way to think about it is just think about some examples and just work through some numbers. So let's imagine we have a world where the internet consists of just two websites, the New York Times and Fox News. Okay? And there are 12 conservatives and 12 liberals. And that defines the entire population of this world. And each of these people visits exactly one site. So everybody has to pick New York Times or Fox. Okay? I'm going to use blue dots to represent liberals and red dots to represent conservatives following convention. So this is a world that we would say is perfectly segregated. Doesn't get more segregated than this. Every liberal goes to the New York Times. Every conservative goes to Fox. Similarly, everybody on the New York Times is liberal, and everybody on Fox is conservative. So what would our isolation index tell us here? It would say that the average conservative is on a site, Fox News, where 100% of the other people are conservative. So the average conservative's conservative exposure is 1, or 100%. And it would say that the average liberal's conservative exposure is 0, 0%, because the average liberal is on a news website, the New York Times, where there are no other liberals. Or sorry, there are no conservatives. There are only other liberals. So the difference between those two, that's an isolation index of 1, or 100%. And that's as segregated as the world can get. Everybody is on websites that are visited only by other people like them. And nobody is on a website where there's ever anybody else who's different. Okay. This is kind of the opposite extreme. So this is a world where people choose their news sites without regard to their ideology. So that means half of the conservatives go to Fox, and half of the conservatives go to the New York Times. Half of the liberals go to Fox, half of the liberals go to the New York Times. Okay, and what would the isolation index tell us here? Well, the average conservative is on a website that has 50% of its viewers conservative, and that same thing is true for the average liberal. So conservatives and liberals are evenly mixed here, and hence the isolation index would say this is a very unsegregated as possible, in fact, environment. So the isolation index here would be 0. That is to say, this is totally unsegregated. People are making site decisions without regard to their ideology. So these define the two extremes of this measure. Okay, and then you can have a range of possibilities in the interior. So maybe a more realistic example would be this one. 2/3 of conservatives go to Fox and 1/3 go to New York Times. 2/3 of liberals go to the New York Times, 1/3 go to Fox. What would the isolation index say here? So now, conservatives, the average conservative is on a site that's 5/9 conservative. Why? Because 2/3 of conservatives are on Fox News, where 2/3 of people are conservative, and 1/3 of conservatives are on the New York Times, where 1/3 of people are conservative. So that means that the average conservative's conservative exposure is 5/9. And what about for liberals? Well, 2/3 of liberals are on the New York Times, which has 1/3 conservatives. And 1/3 of them are on Fox News, which has 2/3 conservatives. So that's a liberal's exposure to conservatives of 4/9, or an isolation index of 1/9 in the ballpark of 10%. Okay? This gives you a feel for how this measure works in practice. So what we're going to do is take this measure and go look for data that we can use from the internet and some other domains of life that we can use as comparisons, and go ahead and try to calculate this measure. So ask, on a typical day, what share of the other people on a typical conservative's average news website or in their news diet are also conservative? Okay. Are they mostly visiting sites visited by other conservatives, or are they visiting sites that are visited by a pretty even mix of people? Do the same thing for liberals. Look at how different they are and call that the extent to which a given medium is segregated. So to do this, what do we need to know? Basically, we need to know for every news or political website online, how big is it? And also, what share of the visitors to it, say on a typical day, are conservative? And those are the things we need to be able to measure. And we'd like to be able to do that not only for the internet, but also for some of these other domains, so we can compare them and see, does it in fact look like the internet is more segregated than other domains in which people might get political information or have political dialogue? So to get our data, we turn to a company called ComScore, which is basically a leading provider of measurement of internet activity. Okay? And we take data from their, we basically create a universe of news and politics sites based on the ComScore data set. And then for each site, we can measure how many people on a typical day visit that site. Now, how does ComScore know that? ComScore knows that because they have a very large panel of internet users, okay, and software on those users' machines reports back to a ComScore server on all of their internet activity. Okay? So ComScore, through basically some passive metrics, is able to measure for these people all of the domains that they visit, and also to distinguish multiple users of the same machine, so you can really get individual level granularity. And our main measure of site size, how we're going to measure whether one site's bigger than another, is just the average number of daily unique visitors over the 12 months of 2009. So that's a pretty standard measure in trying to measure the size of a website. So that's how we know how big every site is. Okay? A somewhat trickier issue is to learn how conservative are the visitors to a given site. Okay? And for that, we turn to another ComScore product, which is called the Plyometrics Panel, in which ComScore surveys a rotating group of panelists and asks them a bunch of questions about themselves. One of which is, in terms of your political outlook, do you think of yourself as very conservative, somewhat conservative, middle of the road, somewhat liberal, or very liberal? Okay? And so we can use this measure to compute the average share conservative over the 12 months of 2009. That is, on a typical day in 2009, what share of visitors to this site, say the New York Times, would say that they're conservative if asked? Okay? And our final sample has 119 news or politics websites, which our calculations suggest represent most of online news and politics activity. Basically, sites below that are not in our sample just because they're too small for ComScore to report measurements for them, and those sites add up to a relatively small share of activity on a given day. Now, we also want to be able to measure behavior in other domains, not just the internet. So for that, we turn to another data provider, which is a company called MRI, and they provided us with data on a nationally representative panel of 50,000 people. Here, they don't have passive metrics, that is, they're not watching what these people are doing in their computers or homes, they're asking them questions. And so for these people, we know what they report doing in terms of their cable news viewing, their nightly broadcast television news viewing, national newspaper readership, magazine readership, and local newspaper readership. And conveniently for us, MRI asked these panelists the exact same question that ComScore asks their panelists about their ideology. So we have exactly comparable ideology data. And comfortingly, the data are pretty harmonious with each other. So we went and took a look. So in the MRI data, we can measure a small set of sites. They don't have the same granularity that ComScore has, but they give us the top internet sites. And for the top internet news sites, the share conservative we calculate from the MRI data and the share conservative that we calculate from the ComScore data are very similar, even though these are two totally different samples that have nothing to do with each other. And in one case, people are self-reporting their behavior. In another case, it's being measured using their computer. We still get pretty good agreement. Okay? That gives us some reason to trust what we're going to do with these data. We also measure some other things about people. In particular, we were interested in this idea that people might encounter other people different from them at work or in the park or on the streets. So we thought we'd calculate some features of those kinds of environments. So we take advantage of some social survey data, some from the general social survey, which basically asks people about others that they know through different domains, so the people you know through your neighborhood or at work or through voluntary associations or your family, and ask them how conservative or liberal they are. And we also got some survey data where people actually identify who are the five people you talk to most about politics. And then those folks are surveyed. So now we know the ideology of a group of people and the people they talk to. Okay? So we use those to compare the internet to some other domains in which people have political interaction. Okay, so let me show you some very basic facts about online news consumption, okay, and put it in the context of some other media. Okay, so first of all, something you should know that's helpful in interpreting lots of our measures is if you ask people in the U.S., are you conservative or liberal, if they agree to give you an answer, the majority of the time they're going to say conservative. And so this is not a domain, when you're looking at these numbers, you shouldn't be thinking of 50-50 as the midpoint. You should be thinking something skewed to the right of 50-50 as the midpoint. Okay? And if you look across news media, what you see is cable news is the most conservative in terms of the viewership. So on a typical day, cable news audience is to the right a little bit of the U.S. population as a whole. Okay, the broadcast news audience is a little bit, so the local newspaper audience is similar to cable news. Broadcast news is a little bit to the left of that. The internet audience is more liberal, as are the magazine and national newspaper audiences. So now let's break into some of these different media and see kind of what's the picture of the dispersion ideology across different outlets, because ultimately that's what we're interested in, not just how conservative or liberal is a medium as a whole, but to what extent within the medium are we seeing conservatives only going to one kind of outlet and liberals only going to another kind. And so here's broadcast news, which in some sense is kind of about as unsegregated as it can get. Okay, this is a plot, I'll show you a lot of plots like this. This plot just erased the news outlets from bottom to top according to the fraction of people who watch that news outlet on a given day that say they're conservative. Okay, and then I'll make the sizes of the font proportional to the size of the site, the audience size of the outlet. Okay? So what you can see is the big three, CBS, ABC, NBC, are all basically the same. Okay, they all have basically the same share conservative. So it's going to turn out, and I'll show you this later, that this medium is very unsegregated. The isolation index for this medium is extremely low because basically the average conservative and the average liberal are on essentially watching essentially the same broadcast television. Here's cable news. Okay, not too many surprises here, I would think. So Fox News is to the right of CNBC and CNN, and MSNBC is just a bit to the left of those. And you know, these outlets represent the vast majority of the sort of typical cable news audience. In terms of national newspapers, here the story is kind of interesting. The Wall Street Journal and USA Today, ideologically, their readership is basically a cross-section of America. Okay, it's very, very close to 67%, which is just about what you get from a representative sample of people in the U.S. The New York Times readership is skewed quite a bit to the left of that. I think it's about 33% conservative, so about half as conservative as the U.S. population as a whole. Here's news magazines again. A lot of the action is, in terms of the overall importance of these magazines, a lot of the action comes from the big three, Time, Newsweek, and U.S. News and World Report, and all of those are pretty close to each other. And there are some outliers that are far to the left, so the New Yorker draws a readership that's only about 20% conservative, the Atlantic draws a readership that's only slightly more conservative than that. And then here's the internet. Okay, so these are the top 10 internet news sites. Okay. So the story is sort of interesting here. So a lot of, if you look at the sizes of the fonts, a lot of the activity is concentrated in pretty big sites that are close to the middle. Okay. AOL News, Yahoo News, MSNBC, CNN, okay, big sites like that. And there are very few, actually, really ideologically extreme sites that make it into the top 10. Okay. So to make that a little more concrete, these are the bubbles indicating the top 10 most conservative and the top 10 most liberal news websites, okay, in 2009. And there's only a little bit of overlap between the top 10 most conservative and the top 10 by size, and that is the Drudge Report. And the only overlap between the top 10 most liberal and the top 10 by size is BBC News. Okay. And then just to give you a little bit of an idea of what's in these tails here, so what's out in the kind of most conservative or most liberal sites. So here's the top 10 most conservative sites. So for example, at BillO'Reilly.com, if you survey people who visit that site today, almost nobody will say, I am a liberal. Okay? And the same is essentially true on RushLimbaugh.com. Okay? So just to give you an idea of some of these, so these are ones you're probably familiar with. You may not know about CNS News. They broke the story that Obama will spend more on welfare in the next year than Bush spent on the entire Iraq war. They also broke the story that Cass Sunstein, whom I quoted at the beginning, wants to remove your organs without your consent. Which, actually, this article quotes more or less verbatim and quite extensively from the book Nudge, which Cass Sunstein wrote with our own Richard Thaler, basically arguing that people should be defaulted into being cadaveric organ donors. It's a little bit different than the pitch they're giving it here, which says your organs can be removed without your consent. So that's CNS News. And then these are the 10 most liberal sites. So here we have sites like Daily Kos that you're probably familiar with, or MoveOn.org, Alternet, and then maybe some others that are less familiar to you, and they're also pretty small. So like on Daily Kos, on a typical day, you might find the headline, My God, what is Dick Cheney hiding? Okay. So that's kind of a picture of the variation in ideology that you see online. And as you can see, just from these little snippets, the variation in the audience conservativeness, or the audience ideology, is very closely related to variation we see in content. So you look at the sites that have a very conservative audience, the content also tends to skew just a bit more to the right. And the same is true of the sites that have a more liberal audience. The content there just casually seems to skew to the left. So now we have these data in place, we can go and actually do our calculation and say, well, how segregated is the internet in terms of this isolation index? And the answer is that the isolation index is about 7.5%. So where is that coming from? The average conservative is on a news website on a typical day where about 61% of the other people on that site are also conservative. And for the average liberal, about 53% of the people on their average site are conservative. Okay, so the difference between them is about 7 percentage points, okay, 0.075. So are these differences big or small? Let me give you a few different ways to think about it. So first way you could think about it is you could ask, what would be an example of a website whose audience is as conservative as the average conservative's daily news diet? Okay, and the answer is USA Today. Okay, and what would be an example of a website that's as liberal as the average liberal's daily news diet online? The answer is CNN. So in a sense, the difference between the average conservative and the average liberal is about the difference between USA Today and CNN. Okay? Let me give you a few other ways to think about it. Let's imagine we did the following experiment. Everybody's going to shake hands with somebody else who visited the same news website as them today. And we're going to ask, of all the handshakes that we're watching now take place, what fraction are between liberals and conservatives? And what fraction are between liberals and liberals, or conservatives and conservatives? Okay? And it's very easy to do this calculation. It turns out 45% of these handshakes would be across ideological lines. Is that a big number or small number? Well, suppose we forced everybody to be on the same website, which is as big as this number can get, then it would be about 49%. So we're exhausting about 92% or 93% of all of the opportunities for cross-ideology interaction in this kind of handshake metaphor. And that's another way to think about these numbers. I'll give you another way. Could we find a place on Earth that's as conservative as the average conservative's average news website? Yes. That place is called Minnesota. Okay. What about some place that's as liberal as the average liberal's average news website? Are liberals going to websites that are far more liberal than any physical place they could ever go? Definitely not. Okay. Both Massachusetts and California are about as liberal as the average liberal's average daily news diet online. And just to give you another point of comparison, given the history of this measure that we're using, which comes from the literature on racial segregation, if you were to construct this measure for the racial segregation of neighborhoods in the United States, you would get an answer, depending on what exactly how you did it, between 20 and 40%. So that's to compare to that 7.5%. Of course, that's a very different question. That's about the racial segregation of neighborhoods, not the ideological segregation of the internet, but just to give you a sense of the background here. So this is a visualization. Right now it's a little bit boring because there's only two numbers on it, of the segregation on the internet. So what does this plot show? Okay, the top bubble is the average conservative, is the conservative exposure of conservatives. So it's the share conservative on the average conservative's average daily news website. And the bottom bubble is that same number, but for liberals. So the length of this line segment, that's the isolation index on the internet, 7.5 percentage points, and that's also the position on the x-axis. Okay, so this is just a way to visualize how segregated is the internet. And now we can use this visualization to compare the internet to other domains. Okay, so here's a comparison of the internet to other news media. So first thing to note, as we expected, the internet is more segregated than nightly broadcast news. ABC, CBS, and NBC are about as unsegregated as it gets. Basically, they draw from cross-sections of America. All of them draw from essentially the same cross-section, at least ideologically. And so this medium looks really unsegregated. Okay. Cable news looks a little bit more segregated than broadcast news. Local newspapers and magazines a little more segregated than that. The internet a little more segregated than those, and then for the reason I showed you before, national newspapers actually beat out the internet by a little bit. Okay. So the internet's kind of in the pack on the high end of the pack in terms of different kinds of news media. And what about some other comparisons to help us think about how segregated the internet is? Let's think about geography. Okay, so this puts the ideological segregation of counties in the U.S. and the ideological segregation of zip codes in the U.S. on the same scale. Okay, so the internet's a bit less segregated than zip codes. So what does that mean? Go back to our handshake metaphor. Shake hands with a random other person who lives in the same zip code as you. Now shake hands with a random other person on the same news website as you. That second person's more likely to be different from you ideologically than the first person. So the people on the same news website as you are more likely to be different from you, at least ideologically, than people who live around you. Okay? What about people you actually know? That's just random people in your zip code. Okay? Well, people you know from your neighborhood, say, they're even more like you than people who live in your zip code, right? Because you've chosen to know them, or some process has chosen you to know them. And people in your family, they look even more like you than people in your neighborhood. People you trust, even more like you than your family. Okay, not necessarily the same group of people. And then, of course, the most segregated group are people who you talk about with politics. The people you talk about with politics, about politics with, so people who are called your political discussants, so that people you discuss political matters with, those people are very similar to you ideologically. Okay, so if you're talking to people about politics, chances are those people are a lot like you. If you think they're different from you, probably you're confused. Okay. In the grand scheme of things, they're probably a lot like you. Okay, so those domains actually look really segregated compared to the internet. Okay. Now, this picture, I think, says, at least compared to some of these other domains, maybe the internet is not actually kind of a force for self-segregation the way that it might have been. Okay. But this is only a part of the story, because this is showing you data for the average internet user. Okay? Maybe the internet doesn't help the average person find people exactly like them, but maybe the internet basically fosters people with really extreme views, makes it possible for them to go out way into the extremes and become completely isolated from the mainstream. So we took our data and tried to basically figure out whether that's happening. Okay? So basically we want to ask, well, what about the people who are really extreme, either in their ideology or in their news diets? How segregated are those people? So this is now a histogram that shows you for in the distribution of users of the internet, or distribution of users of internet news, okay, what is the dispersion of their conservative exposure? Okay. So it's going to turn out in these data, just to give you a sense, that let's put now, so here's the 5th percentile of the distribution, here's the 95th. Give you some sense of what to relate those to, here's Fox News and here's the New York Times. So what is this figure saying? This figure's saying, so right here, this is the conservative exposure of somebody who gets all their news from Fox. That's their only online news source. Okay, that's that line labeled foxnews.com. Okay? So that turns out to be a really unusual person. Okay? Turns out that if you get all your news from foxnews.com, you're in the 98th or 97th percentile in terms of how conservative your news diet is, which means that people who are getting all their news from sites that are to the right of Fox News, like Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, those people are like the unicorn. Okay, we have a very big data set, and it's still hard to find them. Right? So even if you look at a data set of 50,000 or 100,000 people, you're going to see very few people like that. Okay. Likewise, let's go on the other extreme. Let's take people who get all their news from the New York Times. Okay. Well, those people actually are really unusually liberal in their news diet. They're more liberal than 95% of people in terms of their news diet. And this other little notch here that's next to the New York Times, that's the Huffington Post. Somebody who gets all their news from sites that are to the left of the Huffington Post basically doesn't exist. Okay, that's a really, really rare person. You almost never see those people in the data. Okay, so somebody who's getting all their news from the New York Times, that's already a really unusual person on the internet. Somebody who's getting all their news from dailycause.com, that person is almost impossible to locate. Okay, let's look at it another way. This is now the conservative exposure of individuals broken out not according to whether they say they're liberal or conservative, but by our whole hierarchy of liberalness or conservativeness. Okay? And it turns out that even here, depending on how you want to think about it, segregation isn't all that extreme. So on sites visited by very liberal people, people who say they're very liberal, 13% of other visitors would say they're very liberal. And on sites visited by people who say they're very conservative, 9% of people on those sites would say they're very liberal. Okay. So this time for the economics part. So what's going on? You know, why? I think we could ask that question on two levels. First of all, what are the economic fundamentals of the news market that are driving everybody to actually have so much overlap in their news consumption, even though it would seem that America is very polarized ideologically and people's preferences are really divergent? And then the other way I would pose the question is, why, given that our casual observation tells us the internet is in fact this very segregated media space, why do the data disagree? Okay, what are we missing in our casual view of this market? And let me try to give you some answers to that. So in the back of our minds, I won't flesh this out much today, we have in mind a model in which consumers make decisions about which news sites to visit, and they care about two things. Okay. They care about the ideological match between a news outlet and themselves. That's clearly important to people, drives what they do to some extent. But they also care about how good the outlet is. How much news can I actually learn about from this news outlet? Okay? Those are kind of the two key forces in our framework. And in our world, people can visit multiple outlets, which turns out to be empirically very important. A lot of people don't just look at one site every day. They look at more than one. And so what I'll try to show you is that in this world, there are kind of two forces that are working to limit how segregated the news media are online. One is substantial variation in the quality, at least as perceived by consumers, of different outlets. And the other is the fact that people, by and large, go to multiple outlets, especially people who go to extreme outlets. Okay, so let me show you what I mean by these things. So first of all, this is a comment on what's sometimes known as the long tail phenomenon, just pointing out that there's still a really important short tail in internet news. Okay, so what does this plot show? It shows the fraction of all daily visits to news websites accounted for by the top N sites. Okay? And so it turns out the top 20 news sites, that's about 80% of all the daily unique visits to news websites. Now you might be thinking, well, what if we did this by minutes or page depth? Then it would actually get even more extreme. In that case, the top 20 sites would account for even more of the activity. Okay? So this is in some sense generous to the little sites. So part of what's going on online is mass media are really important online as well as offline. Okay? Media that cater to a large group of people draw huge audiences. And media that cater to small niches draw smaller audiences. And I think part of the reason for that flows from the fundamental economics of media, where content is produced with fixed costs. So once you produce content, you want to deploy it over lots and lots of people. And what's the flip side of that? It means that if you have a small niche audience, it's very hard to get the economic support you need to generate lots of good news content. So the sites that are actually generating, you know, ongoing real-time coverage of actual news are actually not that many sites. Okay? And those sites draw a huge fraction of the activity. Okay? How can we see the role that plays in driving the segregation numbers that we've got? Well, what we've done here is basically break out the internet into four smaller internets, each consisting of different groups of websites. The first internet consists only of the top 10 news websites. And their isolation index would be even lower, would be 0.062. The next internet consists of the next 15 down, sites 11 through 25 ranked by size. Again, our isolation index would be really small in that group. And the same would be true, actually, if we went to the next 25. But if we eliminated the top 50 sites, which account for the vast majority of traffic, okay, so you can accumulate that up from here. It's a huge fraction of the traffic online. If we eliminated those sites, leaving only about 6.5% of all the daily news activity online, then we would have a pretty segregated internet. Okay, so among visits to sites 51 through 119, which account for a small fraction of total visits to the internet, isolation is pretty big. There's a fair amount of dispersion, with conservatives going to mostly conservative websites and liberals going to mostly liberal websites. But among the top 50 sites, that kind of dispersion is pretty uncommon. Putting this in the language of our model, we go and estimate our model of consumer demand for news media from our data, we can actually extract estimates of basically the utility liberals get from different sites and the utility conservatives get. And in a world where segregation was perfect, like in that first example I gave you where liberals only would ever go to a liberal site and conservatives only would ever go to a conservative site, we would expect this line relating the utility that conservatives get from a site to the utility that liberals get from a site to slope down. Okay? But in fact, not only does it not slope down very much, but it slopes up. Conservatives and liberals by and large agree on what is an attractive news website to visit. Why? Not because they necessarily agree about all matters ideological, but because they want to read about the news. Okay? And if you want to do that, CNN is probably a much better place to actually get the news about what happened today than, say, RushLimbaugh.com. And so both conservatives and liberals agree that CNN is better as measured by their frequency of visiting. Let me talk about another phenomenon that's relevant here, which is cross-visiting. So as I mentioned, it's empirically very important in the data, people actually tend to visit multiple websites. Okay, they don't just visit one. So what this plot shows you is a way to see how important that turns out to be in the data. So what we've done here is each dot is a site. So each dot is a news website like NewYorkTimes.com or FoxNews.com. And then what these, so, and on the x-axis we have the share conservative on that site. And on the y-axis we have the conservative exposure of the average visitor to that site. Now if everybody was only visiting one site, then we'd have the 45-degree line here. That is, everybody's conservative exposure would be equal to the share conservative on the site, the one site they chose to visit that day. But in fact, the line we have is a lot shallower than that. Why? Well, for example, people out here who are visiting BillO'Reilly.com or RushLimbaugh.com, that's not the only place they're getting news. Okay? They're mixing those sites with other sites like FoxNews.com or maybe NewYorkTimes.com. And so as a result, their average news diet looks far less conservative than it would if all of their news was coming from Fox, from Rush Limbaugh or from BillO'Reilly.com. So taking a perspective looking at users rather than sites shows you that actually dispersion in ideological exposure by user is much smaller than dispersion in ideology across sites. And that's kind of what this plot's showing you. So basically, there is no website. One other interesting fact here is there is no website whose average visitor's daily exposure, daily conservative exposure, is to the right of somebody who just goes to Fox News only. Okay, so that person defines kind of the upper limit of how conservative the news diet of visitors to news sites is online. Let me show you some other facts related to this. So this is now, we actually know directly in our data of people who visit one site in a given month, what fraction of those people also visit another site? Okay? So for example, if people visiting any internet site, about 6% will hit the New York Times in a typical month at some point, and 5% will hit Fox News. Okay? And if people visiting Yahoo News in a given month, about 12% will hit New York Times and about 9% will hit Fox. These are people who like news at least enough to go to Yahoo News, so it's not surprising they're more likely to go to the New York Times or to Fox than a random internet user. What about people who visit really conservative sites? Do you think those people are more likely or less likely to go to the New York Times in the same month? Because I'm asking the question, the answer is probably more likely, and in fact that's true. So if you look at visitors to the top 10 news websites, okay, in every single case, people who visit one of those sites are more likely than either the average internet user or the average Yahoo News visitor to visit the New York Times in the same month. Okay? In fact, well, let me show you. So, and the same is actually true basically in the inverse for the most liberal sites. So visitors to the 10 most liberal sites are actually more than usually likely to go to FoxNews.com in the same month in almost every case. So people who visit Daily Cause, they're more likely to go to Fox than people who don't visit Daily Cause. Okay, and by a considerable margin. In fact, here's Stormfront.org. Okay, so Stormfront.org is a white pride website. Okay, it's a neo-Nazi website. And it turns out, I think it's the biggest one, at least in our sample. And it turns out, visitors to Stormfront.org are more likely than visitors to Yahoo News to visit the New York Times in the same month. Okay? And why is that happening? I think the reason is, in order to get to the point where you have views that are unusual, you probably are pretty interested in the news. So people who are on RushLimbaugh.com or BillO'Reilly.com or maybe Stormfront.org, these are people with a high degree of engagement at some level in politics. So they're looking at lots of things online. And as a result, their diet is actually a lot broader than the content of these sites would lead you to suspect. So just some broad takeaways from this analysis so far. Seems to us like online, the segregation by ideology online is pretty comparable to ideological segregation in offline media, like newspapers, okay? And is actually lower than most kinds of actual face-to-face in-person interactions that people have. And we think the reason for that really just comes from the fundamental economics of the news media. Content is produced with fixed costs, which means there's going to be a relatively small number of large providers that are doing most of the actual news content production and distribution. And that means there's a lot of vertical differentiation in this market that's going to drive conservatives and liberals to the same sites. And then the fact that it's so easy to basically channel switch here, that the access costs are so low, and you can easily basically do what advertisers sometimes call multi-home, means people are visiting lots of different sites. Which means that even though all of the people on BillO'Reilly.com would say they're conservative, those people are not exclusively getting news from BillO'Reilly.com. They're getting news from lots of sites. And as a result, their daily news diet is probably a lot more varied than you'd think by looking at the content on BillO'Reilly.com. Okay. So that hopefully gives you a sense of basically how we've been trying to use data to inform these questions about the role of the Internet in society. Thanks.